Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Hello, old dogs, and welcome to
Fun Facts Friday.
This is our once a week, only on Friday show, where we have special episodes not featuring guests, where I will share tricks, tips, terminology, and techniques that will help skyrocket you to real estate investing success. Today's topic is key metrics for quick property evaluations. Well, I just want to touch base with you before we jump into that and just say, hey, guys, I hope you're doing well. I hope your goals and plans are moving forward. I really hope that this might be an encouragement for you. I think this is a great tool that'll be helpful for you in analyzing properties and hopefully lots of properties as time goes on. So let's jump right into our topic and get started. Key metrics for quick property evaluations. Now, if you're serious about real estate investing, which I hope most of you listening are, you're going to look for the right properties to invest in. And that usually means finding good deals, right? In today's market, good deals, though, are not that easy to find. That's why it could take you maybe 100, maybe 50, maybe 200 properties you may look at before you find that good one. But once you find it, it will hopefully be a great property for the long haul and an important part of your portfolio. To know if a property is a good deal or not, you need to run the numbers. It's all about the numbers in many cases here. And so these are going to be some of those key numbers and metrics that you will use to find that property. Now, the first step really is finding the location. And we've talked about that in many other podcasts about emerging markets and good markets to invest in. The key thing here, finding the right location first and then the property with the right numbers. That's how you can help to hopefully build up an impressive portfolio. In previous podcast, I shared, as I mentioned, how to find the right location or market. In this podcast, it's really more about how to find the right property. And those properties should be in a great market. You put the two together, you've got a winning combination. But instead of using in-depth rental property spreadsheets, I want to teach you how to do sort of a quick analysis, something you can scratch on a piece of paper, on the back of a napkin, or it's just something very quickly to assess some of those key metrics. Good deals should jump right off that paper and smack you in the face and boom, move you to quick action here. So some of the things I'm going to be talking about here really are just, trying to get a good financial snapshot. I'm going to talk about two key areas, analyzing income and analyzing equity. Although we talk about, man, cash flow is king here, and that's more on the income side, of course. But I think the equity is important, especially if you're a long-term investor. You're looking to hold on to these properties for a while and maybe even pass them down. So let's get started here. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of numbers, let's take a step back and look at the big picture. The key purposes of your rental property investments is to generate cash flow for retirement, hopefully to increase your net worth and to create a legacy to hand down to your family. Those are at least our a lot of our focus here on the Old Dogs REI Network. But we are, like I said, we're going to look at both income and equity. To typically create a financial snapshot early in that deal analysis process, you may have a legal pad, an envelope, napkin, or whatever scrap of paper you can have handy, right? The snapshot just allows you a quick look at the financial highlights to determine if the deal meets your investment goals. This efficiency is especially handy early on in your investing career because you need to look at a lot of deals, maybe hundreds, before you really start understanding how it works and why the numbers are significant. So as I mentioned, we're going to look at income and equity. These numbers are related to each other, but they each uniquely contribute to your wealth building and to your ability to generate cash flow. I'll explain some of my favorite tools here in this process. Let's take a look at income first, okay? There's a lot of ways to define income, but I'm going to keep it real simple. Income is the money you earn after collecting rent and paying all of your expenses. Keeping it real simple there. That's basically the definition for cash flow too. In a basic investment scenario, you rent a property, your tenants get to use the property, and in exchange, they pay you rent, right? After all your expenses are paid, you get what's left over. That's your cash flow. This number is important because renting is the core business of investment properties. It's the steady engine that pays your mortgage and pays your bills over time. Unlike your equity, which is based upon the relatively fuzzy estimate of the property's resale value, rental income is less difficult to collect and less speculative. So how do you calculate income? Okay, here are some of the key metrics. First one I'm going to go into is called your gross rent multiplier, or your GRM. Gross rent doesn't mean, oh, it's gross and disgusting. No, that's other types of investments you might get involved with. But hey, not in this one. Actually, rent is quite delicious. But gross rent means the total rent before subtracting expenses or other deductions. And it's useful because the gross rent is simple to find and easy to compare to other rental properties. You begin by using the gross rent to calculate the gross rent multiplier, the GRM. The GRM is simple to, it's kind of comparable to other types of stock investing. You'd call it price to earnings, or the PE ratio. It's just a ratio of the property's total purchase price, including any upfront repair costs, to its yearly gross rent, okay? So it's a real simple calculation. It is GRM equals total purchase price divided by your yearly gross rent. And why is that useful? Because it roughly tells us how good a property is at producing income. For example, a property with a GRM of 12, okay, so we're calculating, for example, $144,000 price divided by $12,000 rent, is much better at producing income, okay, again on paper here, than a property with a GRM of 20, okay, which could be like a $300,000 priced home divided by $15,000 rent. The higher the GRM, the less attractive an investment property becomes. GRM isn't the only quick analysis I use with gross rental income. Another simple rule we've talked about a lot on the Old Dogs Network is the 1% rule. Now, the 1% rule is different. The GRM is a ratio using yearly rent, but real estate investors usually think in terms of monthly rent. So the 1% rule is a rule of thumb that takes that into account. I have explained and discussed the 1% rule in numerous other podcasts, as well as our guests, but in brief, the 1% rule says that the gross rent of a property should equal at least 1% of the purchase costs, or better. Simple calculation is the 1% rule says that monthly gross rent is greater than 1% or 1% of the total purchase price. For example, a property with a total upfront cost, okay, price plus closing costs divided by holding costs plus repairs, okay, of $200,000 should at least have a monthly gross rent of $2,000 to meet the 1% rule, right? This property that meets the 1% rule would have a gross rent multiplier of 8.33, which is $200,000 divided by $24,000. $24,000 is the annual gross rent, or $2,000 times 12 months. Meeting the 1% rule does not automatically make a good deal. I have seen many properties meeting the 2% rule even that I've walked away from because of maybe a bad location or rent collection challenges or other issues. So again, these are rules of thumb and we use them as such. But they do allow for a quick analysis and can separate sort of the not so great properties from those that have potential. And properties in high price locations, well, will never come close to the 1% rule, especially here in California. Yet they still could make financial sense in some cases. Now, I know a lot of investors that have invested in California continue to invest in it, but they work on a different really on different numbers and different calculations. This is a rule of thumb, the 1% rule, that allows for quick and easy analysis, okay? It's more of a general rule of thumb. If a property does meet the 1% rule, it's just a sign that it may be worth digging a little bit deeper. Cap rate, okay, it's another one, a key one that you hear a lot about, especially as you get into commercial properties. An important income calculation that we've discussed a lot on our podcast. Unlike the gross rent multiplier, a cap rate tells us how well a property produces income after expenses. In various podcasts and blog articles on our site, I've explained in depth what a cap rate is and why it's important. But for now, here's a basic definition. Cap rate equals net operating income, or NOI, divided by the total purchase price. In case you're wondering, the net operating income is your gross rent minus all of the property's operating expenses and deductions like vacancy, management taxes, insurance, repairs, HOA costs, etc. But those expenses do not include the financing costs, okay? For an example of cap rate, let's take a property, let's say, that produces $6,000 per year in NOI and its total upfront purchase costs are $100,000. So that's $6,000 divided by $100,000. It's a 6% cap rate. Now compare this to another property that produces $7,500 per year in NOI and its total upfront purchase cost is $300,000. So that one would have $7,500 divided by $300,000 would equal a 2.5 cap rate. Now, one deal produces a 6% unleveraged return, okay, i.e. if there was no debt. The other produces 2.5%. If all of the factors are equal, which deal would move you towards your financial goals faster? Yes, the cap rate makes this obvious. And I also use the cap rate as a minimum investment tool. I will typically set a minimum cap rate as I go into any particular market, you know, based on what their market rate averages are in terms of cap rates. If the cap rate is below that number, I won't buy it unless I do something to the property to quickly increase it. Also, keep in mind that appraisers or brokers of investment properties use cap rates to discuss the overall market. They might say, for example, the market cap rate is 7%. This means, on average, most investors in the market purchase their properties with a 7% cap rate. So if you go in there and you're paying 3% in a market where everybody else is paying 7%, that should be a red flag. Let's look at the next rule that we use pretty regularly, the 50% rule. The 50% rule is a shortcut that helps you quickly estimate the NOI and the cap rate. But it's important to remember that it's just a shortcut and not the final analysis. You always are going to need your real numbers to give you a full analysis of a property. But it's a rule of thumb that assumes that 50% of the gross rent will be lost to your operating expenses. So that means your estimated NOI is 50% of the gross rent. So the 50% rule says net operating income, okay, equal to 50% of rent, okay? So this helps you to quickly run the rate cap calculation quickly. For example, if the yearly gross rent is $18,000, 50% of that is $9,000. If your estimated total purchase investment is $180,000, then your cap rate would be $9,000 divided by $180,000, and it'd equal 5%. Again, that's a quick rule that we use, and there's an analyzer that I use that's on our website, and it is really good for these quick calculations. We use a lot of these rules of thumb in that analyzer as a quick means to sort through many different properties that you're looking at. You plug in a few of the key factors, and it fills in the gaps on all of these various categories. So it's also a very helpful tool to analyze things, and it's free. You go to our website at olddogsreinetwork.com, and it'll pop up there, and you can actually download it and with an explanation sheet that comes with it telling you how to use it. Okay, let's keep moving. Net income after financing costs. Until now, all of our income analysis did not really take financing into consideration. But many real estate deals do include financing, so you will want to know how much rental income is left over after you deduct your financing costs. I mean, that's really the key number that you're going to end up with in terms of cash flow. So I'll assume you can figure out how to estimate your monthly mortgage payment, right? And if you don't, I've included a link in the show notes to a commercial mortgage calculator that I often use that will help you to do some of those quick estimates. So for net income after financing costs, it's basically just your NOI minus financing costs. It's pretty simple. You can set goals for a minimum amount of cash flow you'd like to earn per property. And I do this a lot, and I talk about this a lot as well. For example, when I'm looking at apartment buildings, I am looking at generating at least a net income of $100 per door or unit. Again, that's sort of the minimum I'll go. We generally will do higher than that, but that's what we shoot for. So you look at it, let's say a 4-unit property, you would know that you could produce at least $400 per month in your net operating or your net income after financing costs. Now, another calculation, and some people don't like this calculation, but I include it anyway. It's called cash on cash return. After calculating net income, I also like to run a final income calculation called the cash on cash return. And the cash on cash return tells you how much of your down payment or upfront cash investment comes back to you as cash per year. So the basic formula for that is cash on cash return equals net income after financing costs divided by your down payment or total cash invested. If you have a very small down payment, let's say, you know, maybe you're trying to leverage more, the cash on cash return is usually not that useful. For example, if you invested $5,000 and earned $400 per month, you'd have a 96% cash on cash return. Or if you invested none of your own money and let's say the return is basically infinite, even with a minuscule positive cash flow. So while it's not always a useful factor, but it can give you at least a good idea of what kind of returns you're getting. When you could use the cash on cash return, I mean, some people just use it just to brag to their friends. You know, the extreme leverage is that you're using, you know, it doesn't always have the most direct applicable value, but I think it's good as an overview. It becomes useful when you invest these larger amounts of cash up front. It's a form of discipline to help you compare your cash return from this deal to, so let's say, other potential investments like bank CDs, bonds, stock dividends, and annuities. I mean, when you compare the cash on cash return from real estate to those types of investments, you'll see, wow, you know, real estate is superior. But I don't think you need to use that metrics to prove that. I think there's a lot of other factors that'll show you on a regular basis the good returns that you get. Like all these calculations, you have to also look at the entire picture. If you're making huge returns on the property's equity, for example, it might be acceptable to take maybe even a smaller or even a negative cash on cash return for a short period of time. But in an ideal world, you'll make acceptable returns with all calculations. So let's look at the equity part now. And don't want to spend a lot of time on that. Again, we're buying for cash flow, but equity, I think, is important, and especially if you're buying for the long term. Equity is a financial term on what you own, okay? Maybe you've heard equity used to describe shares of stock in a company, but equity can also be calculated for real estate property. What you own is the difference between the fair market value of the property or your asset and the balance of any debt, okay? In other words, your liability. So it's pretty simple. Calculating it is simple. It's the value after repairs, if applicable, minus your mortgage balance, okay? So there are two numbers you must know for this simple math, the value and the mortgage balance. Now, if you do this yourself, this do-it-yourself valuation process is not a replacement for expert help from an appraiser or experienced real estate agent. But this podcast is really about how to assess a property's value at a glance. So you should use third-party experts as additional resources, but not in this initial evaluation stage, okay? You've heard the term ARV, that's after repair value. Those kinds of things, you have to estimate the value of a property. And sometimes you can do a rule of thumb and get a pretty accurate assessment. But for the most part, you know, you do need to, you know, have that professional assistance. I mean, I've looked at properties where all the numbers were right. We looked at our ROI, our return on value, or the cap rate for that market, and all these factors, and you still can't get somebody to buy that property at that price based on the value that you've calculated in, because of other factors in that market. So you do have to take in a number of things. Here are some examples of some equity calculations, okay? Simple one, full price purchase. In this example, you pay, for example, $200,000 for a property. You put $50,000 down and borrow $150,000. Because you paid the full price for the property, your equity is the same as your down payment, right? So you, for example, the asset is worth $200,000. You put $50,000 into it, and there's a debt on it for $150,000. So the equity is $50,000 because, you know, that's really the only amount that's not accounted for, and that's the free and clear. That's money that you can take out at some point. Another example is, let's say if you have a 10% discount. In this example, you work directly with the seller, no listing agent, for example. You close quickly and you pay cash. This allows you to negotiate a 10% discount from the value of $200,000. So you pay $180,000 for the property. You still put $50,000 down, but you now borrow only $130,000. Okay, so now your equity goes up to $70,000, okay, because you got a better price on it and you're not paying as you're not paying as much because you have that discount. Another example would be, as we do with a lot of our commercial properties, is forced depreciation. Okay, let's say, for example, in this example, we'll use the same $200,000 property. In this example, you again pay $180,000 for a $200,000 property, okay? Now, so you got the 10% discount, okay, plus you're going to do some forced appreciation here. So maybe a value add deal, right? So you still put $50,000 down, and again, you borrow $130,000, but you see an opportunity to invest an additional $25,000 into that property improvements, okay? So you're doing some upgrades, you're doing some other things in that property that will increase the total value of the property by $50,000. So now this property is worth $250,000. Now your equity looks something more like this, okay? The asset is worth $250,000, okay? Your equity is increased up to $120,000, okay? Because you had that you did those value add measures, you put some money into it. Your liability is $130,000. So you now, boom, with the value add and forced appreciation, you've got $120,000 out of $250,000. So these are just a few of, there's other ones where you can do, you know, forced appreciation plus principal pay down. You can do some other factors in there that can, that again can increase your equity stake in the property. There's a lot of creative things that you can do, but the problem with estimating sort of future value, and a lot of times it's difficult to do, because you can also look at, for example, if you you're going to assess in 10 years what the value of that property would be, and you may estimate a 3% per year increase in value, and you just don't know. There are unknown variables. I think you're better off doing sort of a forced appreciation type of a situation, where you're basically figuring ARV, after repair value, where you're putting money in and you're increasing the value just by that forced appreciation. But all of these are valid. It's just over time, it gets harder to estimate what may happen. What's the market going to be like in 10 years or down the road? So, it's difficult to always, be able to estimate will it be 3%? Maybe it'll go up to 5% a year in value. You don't always know. So you try your best to make those calculations. So putting it all together, okay, I've looked at a lot of numbers and calculations, but these are some of the key ones that I use in doing a quick analysis on a property to see whether or not it requires additional investigation. And when you do that additional investigation, you will dig deeper. You will look, you will bring in appraiser to give you a sort of a final, but even appraisers will say, we estimate as best we can with the information that we have, realizing that you may get different assessments from other appraisers. So the idea here is, having these quick metrics that you can tap into to assess properties and to sort of separate the wheat from the chaff here and really, just bring those rich properties up for further investigation. Now, there's a lot of stuff you can do in due diligence where you're going to dig deeper and try to verify the values and some of these estimates that you've come up with. But the typical process, it kind of works like this. You set your goals, okay? You hunt for your deals. I might even add in there, before you hunt for the deals, you find your market that you're going to hunt for those deals. You compare the potential deals to your goals, and then from that information, you make your decisions. Now, you can issue an LOI based on some of this data, and as you dig deeper, you'll find out if it's a value or not. Like I mentioned, in a property that we recently had under contract, we went as far as getting it under contract before we dug deep enough to find out that, hey, there's some things here that we don't want to invest in that could end up costing us more than we estimated. So those are all factors and things that will play in, but it can help you to move quickly on a deal, to get into a deal that could be great. Again, if these numbers are all working properly and you do your analysis right, chances are you've got a pretty good chance that that's a good deal. As you dig deeper, you may find other things, and that's just part of the deal. So in conclusion, the idea of this podcast really was just to give you some quick yet effective tools that you can use to buy more rental properties. I mean, if you still love spreadsheets, and I do, don't worry. There's plenty of time to go into the in-depth stuff as you start to narrow those properties down. And I'd recommend, digging deeper. But these are the key factors that you should get a handle on early on. Well, that's it for today. Please note, everything we talked about, or everything that I talked about, we presented here today, they'll be accessed in our show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And just look for the episode on key metrics for quick property evaluations. So until next time, remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Thanks again for listening. And may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.